I think so much of product management, there's kind of the mechanics and the methodology. That's all the stuff you can learn through so many different types of training. But there's so much soft skills in being a successful product manager. And a lot of it is your relationships, not just with your team product management, but your cross-functional team, just as important. Your dev lead, your implementation lead, your support lead, probably the reps that are consistently selling your product. That is so important, especially in a world where so many of us have gone remote and have not come back into the office. It's even more important to do basic things like not just wait for the call, but picking up the phone, picking up the phone and having those conversations.
Hi, wonderful listeners and fellow product rebels. Welcome to another episode. Today, we have the pleasure of introducing Clarissa Riggins, the Chief Product Officer at Experian Health, who's joining us today to share her experience and insights from her remarkable career spanning healthcare technology, SaaS, and digital transformation. Clarissa's journey is a testament to her unwavering commitment to delivering exceptional customer experiences and driving business results through innovation and strategic product development. With a strong foundation in product management and marketing from her time at Intuit, coupled with her Accenture-honed skills in strategy, business process reengineering, and change management, Clarissa has consistently demonstrated her ability to assess situations quickly, develop achievable plans, and drive sustainable results. Throughout her career, Clarissa has held pivotal roles at both Fortune 50 companies and startups, showcasing her versatility and adaptability. During her tenure at Humana, she led a team of over 50, spearheading the development of enterprise data platforms, digital health platforms, and population health management products and services. Please join us as we engage with Clarissa in a thought-provoking discussion that will shed light on her journey, the challenges she has faced, and the strategy she employs to drive innovation and deliver exceptional customer experiences in the ever-evolving landscape of healthcare technology. Clarissa, welcome to our podcast. We are so excited to talk with you today. Thank you for being here.
Hi, thank you. Thank you for having me.
We are going to start with the first question we ask everyone that comes onto the show, which is, what does being a product rebel mean to you?
Sure. So a product rebel to me is ultimately somebody who is an evangelist for the customer and looking to and seeking to do things and solve problems in dramatically different ways that disrupt the status quo. And because it's product, ultimately the new and different ways to solve is through a service offering or a product. And in my world, it's really been in technology and healthcare technology in particular. And as we know, the United States healthcare system is incredibly complex, unnecessarily complex. So there is a pretty low bar when it comes to trying to solve problems in different ways that take friction out of the system. And there's a lot of friction in the healthcare system.
Absolutely. Yes. Absolutely. Clarissa, talk to us a little bit about an example of where you felt like you've been a rebel, right? I mean, like you said, it's easy pickings in healthcare, right? Yeah. Like there's a ton of areas where we can be rebels in that environment. But tell us a little story about a time where you felt, oh man, I'm really swimming upstream here on this one.
Yeah. And I'm just going to point to my current role as Chief Product Officer at Experian Health. And so what we do ultimately, we provide connectivity between providers. And in our particular case, our clients are hospitals and large healthcare systems. Mm-hmm. So you can think of them, whether they're university hospitals or the big providers that you go to, you know, whether it's for an emergency visit or even a general visit. So we provide connectivity between those providers as well as the payers. So you can't really see and feel always what our product is. We're essentially a business-to-business organization. How I was specifically a rebel is when you think about the role of a product manager, or in my case, a chief product officer, there's obviously the products that we deliver, the connectivity between the providers and the payers. And you can't think about your product as just the offering, but you have to think about them in terms of the touch points. So a way that I've been a rebel to my own organization as I came in about 18 months ago was the product manager, the product practitioner's job is not just in the delivery of the roadmap that is customer-centered, that is backed in voice of customer data, but it's also thinking through all the different touch points, the touch points that Experian Health has with the client. And if you think about it, what are the touch points in simple terms? They first get sold through a salesperson. That's usually a long process, you know, anywhere from 6 to 18 months, depending on how long that relationship has been cultivated and the case has been made to buy, if you will. Then it usually gets handed off in our world, again, business to business, to an implementation team that needs to have a really good understanding of what a model configuration or implementation is so that we can not only as a company recognize revenue, but the client can start to see the value of the product. Sometimes that could take up to 90 days, if not longer, before the client has even had a chance to use the product. Then they use the product. And then often if there are calls or parts of the experience that aren't working, guess what? They'll pick up the phone, they'll open a ticket, et cetera. So all of that background is important to say that when I first got here, the team was really just looking at, hey, this is my piece, the product, the software experience. And a lot of what I really needed to work with the team on, and not just the product team, but also our cross-functional partners, is product is a team sport. Ultimately, and if you think about the experience that they have with us starts at the very beginning. It's how are we talking about and pitching the value, talking about the value of the offerings that we're providing and the problems that it solves. It starts at the very beginning with how your sales representative might be talking about the value proposition, but also more importantly, what is the cost of inaction if you're not going to be using the product? And product management has a big role in all of those touch points. And so what we really started to do differently with the product team is like product is not just responsible and the steward for that technology that is solving the problem in this case, but ultimately cross-functionally partnering with sales and our product marketing people with the implementation team to make sure that we are kind of not only getting the time to value to our clients, but also defining what a model installation looks like, in addition to making sure the product experience itself is good, but also ensuring that we are providing the right tools, capabilities, and knowledge articles, if you will, to our support team so that when they do have to potentially answer a call or support or service a client that they are prepared and it doesn't have to necessarily go back to the product manager. So I think it's really a mindset shift more than it's a set of activities that we undertook as an organization, and we're still transforming the organization. But a lot of what I did really in infusing kind of a rebel mindset is opening kind of the aperture of how our product managers and how our team should be looking at the customer experience.
There's so much there, Clarissa. We talk a lot about end-to-end and what you've done is you've touched upon some of the surface of how to think about that end-to-end experience. So I want to take it a click down and explore it in two different ways. One is there must be a diagnosis of what you saw to say, look, I actually have to spend some time, because coming in as a chief product officer, you will spend your time in specific ways because you diagnose this is where I need to focus. So I'd love to understand what you saw, because must have seen behaviors, activities that led you to understand this is where I need to pay attention. And then the second piece is, how did you start to help your product team understand what to do, how to interact with these stakeholders that allowed them to be effective? So if you can sort of tell us from a specific point of view, you personally, what did you do to diagnose? And then secondly, what did you do to help your team be effective and be successful in creating this end-to-end experience that ultimately thinks about your customer and makes it a better experience for them?
Yeah, sure. So in terms of how did I get to this point of realizing that it was an opportunity area for us? So I really spent the first 60, 90 days just listening to my team, but also sitting in with our cross-functional partners to hear feedback on kind of areas where they thought, gosh, we're falling short, for example, on our implementation cycles are way longer than they should be. Like the client isn't even able to experience the product yet. I kind of just spent time with all the different teams, just getting feedback. And also, you know, taking the feedback with a grain of salt, right? But also listening. I think it was just really listening. And it was also learning what they do and how they do it. Because it's not just, if you think about the role of a chief product officer, yes, my core area is really being the in many ways, it's a chief customer officer too, if you're thinking about it correctly. Mm-hmm. And the chief customer officer, in many ways, you have to look at all the touch points. So that was kind of the mindset in which I came into this diagnosis is it's listen to my team, hear about the issues, the problems, the opportunities, but also meet with the different teams. And, you know, if you think about products, it's truly the exchange of value between the organization, you know, and our client. So it is the core of so much. So that's kind of how I took that role. But what I noticed, just to take an example of the implementations team, I found that our implementation cycles were very long and it depended on the products. And that the products that were doing well, meaning that were pretty tight in terms of our implementation cycles and that there weren't a lot of iterations back with the client, were the ones that, this sounds so simple, had really clear documentation, had a modeler standard for how we were to best practice configure clients. To the extent that there were exceptions to the configurations, we were writing them down. We weren't always writing down the configurations. So that was the other thing, which makes it really hard to support if there's an issue and you don't really like document for the support person how kind of the exception cases. That's a whole other conversation, by the way, is how off script do you want to get off of configuration? But it starts with having kind of a standard best practice way. And what I realize is the implementation teams couldn't really do it by themselves. They needed the expertise, the knowledge of the product managers and the product owners to help define what standard model implementation looked like. That was just an example. But what I was finding is when I sat with my teams, they were often like, hey, that's not my problem. That's implementations. And it was like, actually, it is our problem because it touches the client. And if it takes 90 days, actually even up to 6 months to get a client up and running, that's like 90 days, 6 months that they're not even using the product to see the value. So we need to think of it as our problem. So some of it was also just kind of changing the mindset of my team. Like, hey, yes, it is about the product and the technology roadmap to solve these problems upstream, all the things. But we should also think about the implementation, the supportability, and even the positioning and the pricing. That is, I'm not saying you're responsible for all of that, but you're an enabler to all of that to make sure that all those touch points are tight and that we're enabling success for our other functions that touch the client. So hopefully that helps with just kind of the diagnosis and kind of the experience that I went through, at least in my first couple months here.
Super helpful. And maybe you were going to get to mm-hmm. this, but mindset is one, right? I'm sure there are sort of practices that helped sort of reinforce and sort of broaden somebody's, like you said, aperture, which is great. Can you take us through those practices?
This sounds so simple, but we just weren't doing it. And this is a bit of airing our dirty laundry, but we, prior to me being here, we were kind of in a general manager model. So we weren't in a functionally aligned model. And so when you have a GM model and that person pretty much owns and has reporting into them all of the functions, it's easy to have influence over all the steps. Well, we made an organizational change a couple of quarters before I got here to go to a functionally aligned model. We didn't do the appropriate change management. So guess what happened when we moved from a GM model to a functionally aligned model of having a COO, a CPO, a CTO, et cetera, for the business unit? We forgot how to talk to each other. And, I mean, it sounds so simple, right? But we forgot.
Oh, it's so common.
We kind of lost the mechanisms. Let's call it the structure to bring together cross-functional partners to make decisions on behalf of the client and central, where it relates, is our product. And so this sounds so simple, but we just kind of put in the structure of, we call them the diamond teams, but it's really a cross-functional team led by the product manager with kind of this, the product manager, the product owner, the dev lead, and often the implementation lead. And then representatives, like as needed, we bring in product marketing if we're close to a launch, et cetera. It sounds so simple, but we weren't doing it. Mm. And so we formalized the structure across all of our products where we have product managers that lead these cross-functional teams, and they make decisions on everything. They make decisions on roadmap prioritization, trade-off decisions, if there's a project because we have to put together a new model implementation or make updates to the documentation. It's all done within that core team. If we are doing go-to-market planning because we have a new product or feature set that's going out, it's done within that core team. And the idea is it's that accountable team that's responsible for providing input and making the decisions, but also it's a communication mechanism to make sure that that information is getting disseminated to the appropriate internal stakeholders that touch the client. This is how you get to end-to-end, ultimately. Now, is it perfect? No, it's not perfect. We're still, when I'm learning, and we're about 12 months into this construct that we formalized, is that we are, not all the teams are using kind of our diamond teams or our cross-functional teams the same way. And we built a forum so that we can have these cross-functional discussions, and they weren't all using it in the same way. So we're kind of, one of the things we're doing going into our next fiscal year planning is just making sure that we're kind of teaching best practices and continuing to educate the teams on here's how you should be using these cross-functional forums. So that was a very long number one answer to this. How did you do this? I think the other thing that we're doing differently, and I think you guys would be very familiar with this, we weren't getting back out in front of the customer and watching them do work. This is so basic, but we weren't doing it. We were having lots of meetings in meeting rooms, in conference rooms, if not addressing issues. We weren't having proactive conversation and also learning how they're doing, how they're using our product or other products, or our product in concert with all of their other products, which is equally as important. And what we're finding in the world of healthcare technology and, you know, the environment of hospitals and healthcare systems, they are using one of 7 products in concert with us. So in addition to getting our product teams back out to watch what they do in their environment, I called it rounding. That's what we do. Just like doctors and providers round, we round, and we visited the ED, we visit the admissions desk, we visited registration, we watch the flow of patients come in, and we literally stand behind them and watch them.
Yeah, I love
and
that.
It's not only the product managers, but we're getting the engineers to come out, as well as some of the implementation managers. This sounds very familiar, right? But we just weren't doing it. And I think that's also kind of helping infuse a bit of the kind of the end-to-end mindset and a lot of the empathy that we're trying to just build, not only within our product teams, but also in those cross-functional partners that I was talking about. So those are the two things that I'd say we're doing differently.
No, I love it. I just wanted to, asking two-part questions is so mean, and I apologize.
Right from the beginning. I know, I had to write those down.
I know, it's such a mean thing to do. I was like, so, that was like ridiculous. But the second part of it, just to refresh, was I'm super curious as to how, when you're thinking about the team, so you're looking at this team and you hinted at this, they were saying, wait a minute, not my problem. And you're turning around and you're saying, well, actually it is. But there is a way that you need to help them. You know, telling them, yes, it's your problem is step one. But then how do you get them to work with these cross-functional partners? What did that look like? How do you get them partnering with the sales team, with your enablement team, with your success teams, and so forth? What did that process look like? What are the different skills that you found yourself having to either coach or help with? I'm interested in what that transition looked like when you get the, it is your job, to that transition to how do you help them over that hurdle? What's the first steps that you took?
I think first and foremost, as leaders, sometimes putting the structure in place is the first step. You just gotta, and that's what I was talking about, is like, we are formalizing the structure and we are all doing it. And it was just kind of a, let's do this. We definitely got input from the team because you can't also just be dictatorial and say thou shalt, but it was one of those that it was so clear to me that that's what needed to happen. So the structure was in place. We also said, hey, we need to kind of reteach people what it means to be cross-functional and the type. So we actually put together a little bit of a playbook of like, here are the types of things that you would be doing in your cross-functional teams. And I have a product operations function. In addition to having product management, product owners, innovation, and CX, I have a very small but mighty product operations team. So I had them actually partially for learning and partially to glean best practices. I had them sit in on a couple of these. And this wasn't like meant to be at all punitive. It was truly from the perspective of learning how we're running these teams, learning how we're leading and influencing these teams, and also providing coaching. And I asked my leaders, my VPs who are responsible for these parts of the product portfolio, to also sit in. Because I think so much of product management, there's kind of the mechanics and the methodology. That's all the stuff you can learn through so many different types of training. But there's so much soft skills in being a successful product manager. And a lot of it is your relationships, not just with your team product management, but your cross-functional team, just as important. Your dev lead, your implementation lead, your support lead, probably the reps that are consistently selling your product. Like, that is so important, especially in a world where so many of us have gone remote and have not come back into the office. Like, it's even more important to do basic things like not just wait for, you know, the call, but picking up the phone, picking up the phone and having those conversations. And so I'm getting to kind of a soft skills component that is really, really important. And that is like almost things you have to see in action and coach and observe in order to refine, in addition to kind of the mechanics of here's the playbook, here's kind of how you work cross-functionally to influence, here's how you work with your implementation leader to make sure that we are documenting best practices and we're putting processes in place where we have to make updates, and we're doing it on a quarterly basis. And I think that's where the structure part is really important, and we as leaders just need to like make it paint by numbers easy for our team too. So that's a lot of what I'm trying to do, is put in the structure, coach the soft skills, and continue to just learn and glean best practices and share that back out with the team. Hopefully that helps answer the question.
Very helpful. And now I want to switch lenses in this,
yeah,
right? Which is, yeah, you were able to implement structure, support the product management team. Talk to us a little bit about, I mean, you're dealing with all these cross-functional partners that have been in sort of this habitual sort of organizational style behavior. They all have their own priorities. They're all dealing with their own objectives. How do you make that change? Because now you're asking them to also commit their time and their partnership.
Oh, yeah.
And
yes.
So talk to us a little bit about that part of the change management.
Sure. And this is still a journey for us. And in fact, we've spent a lot of time as a health leadership team beyond my function talking about it. And this sounds, again, super simple, but we weren't being disciplined about it, is how do you create shared accountability and shared goals? That is so important. And it's not just writing them down. It's kind of putting teeth behind it. And performance management. And, you know, that is so important. I've been spending a lot of time with my peer on the engineering side talking about how do we not just elevate one function, how do we elevate both functions by having shared goals? And so I won't say that I'm doing it yet, but we are in the process of planning for this going into this next fiscal year. You know, how do we start to provide visibility forums for how the teams are doing in certain measurements of delivery and quality? Like, we were just kind of all going at it in our own way. I'm using this as an example because I could do all the right things in terms of leveling up my team, but I can't do it without my cross-functional partners, especially in engineering, especially in technology product management, right? And so I would say shared goals is going to be critical, and then putting kind of teeth behind it in performance management is going to be very important. And I think something that we have not been as deliberate about in the past. It's been pretty squishy. We talk about shared goals, but then it's like when everyone goes back to their corners, you know, we're like, yes. And then we go back to our corners and still do what we're doing. So this is where it gets really important too, because everyone is going to have their departmental goals. And then in my world, departmental goals, product, and then product goals. And some things are going to be elevated all the way up as like, here's kind of our business unit goals, and not everything's going to be necessarily tracked at this level. And this is where I think we're going to have to get very disciplined as an organization to ensure that we have the right visibility forums to drive accountability. And we're still in the process of figuring that out. So I am totally open to ideas, but I'm a firm believer in having these visibility forums to drive the action and accountability across functions. Because ultimately, if we don't have that, it's just everyone's going to go back to their corners and keep doing what they've been doing. They have day jobs. Everyone has their day job, but then there's the things that kind of have to get elevated up as like, these are priorities that we're kind of tracking as a leadership team. And so we're talking a lot about what does that really start to look like? I wish I had the answer, but I feel like there's some obvious things that we just haven't been doing.
Well, I mean, I think, you know, Heather and I have been spending a lot of time talking to various clients in terms of OKRs and KPIs and cascading and connecting.
Yes.
And I think you're absolutely on the right track. I think this connection, this shared accountability, the fact that you've got both teams that are laddering up and both teams are looking at this, the shared accountability for shared goals and objectives makes all the sense in the world because, you know, just logically, if we're trying to solve at the end of the day for two different things, you're going to diverge. So yes, but I also like the fact that you're saying it's got to have teeth behind it because otherwise you're right. You're going to do what you're at the end of the day held accountable for. Okay, I'm going to take us down a different path and this is just going to be for fun. So we're all into an alumni. I want you to take your career back sort of 20 years and I want you to think about what is it that you still go back to and do, because there are certain things that Heather and I still to this day pull from our experience from decades ago. And I'm really interested, and we will, you're the first person that I've asked this question to, but we're going to do this from now on for every Intuit alumni that comes on the show. We're going to ask this question. So what do you think about and what do you still draw upon from your experience back then?
Honestly, it's well, in the world of product, you can't be a great product manager without knowing who your end customers are. And you can't really know your end customers unless you spend time with them in person, in action, and watch them do work. And it's not just watching them do work using your product. It's watching them do work in the context of everything else they're doing and dealing with. And I'm just going to give you an example. As I mentioned, I've put it as a requirement of my team to go out at least 3 times per quarter, so once a month, to go visit a client and round and watch them use our products. And it doesn't even have to be their product. It could be any one of our products, but just watch them in their environment. So we've been in emergency rooms behind registrars. We've been in admissions desks. We've been everywhere. And it was eye-opening. It's so easy to just be like, oh, they're just using my software. They're actually, in our world, they have our software up. They've got their host system. They've got like 3 versions maybe of their host system because they didn't upgrade. So they literally have, we call it the swivel seat. They literally have 7 tabs up. And it's kind of crazy, but it makes you have an appreciation for how patient and tolerant our end users are with all the technology they use. This is the healthcare system, guys. Yeah, it's pretty crazy totally. And it's pretty scary. So I was saying earlier, sometimes the bar is low. Actually, the bar is low as it relates to
for sure.
How you can automate and make the people behind the desk that are ultimately trying to serve patients and help them, you know, potentially through technology, through products, like reduce friction and save time and have them work on critical thinking tasks. But I still draw on like, get out there, get in front of the client. And when I say in front of the client, don't be in a meeting room with them. Watch them do work. And so, and there's nothing like it. I mean, my goodness, again, the 7 post-it notes on the side of their desk with all of the logins, the 7 tabs, the 5 screens. And then, oh, by the way, they spend a little bit of time in our product and they're copy pasting things from our product into the host system. It's like, oh my gosh.
And but by the way, it's all regulated. And so
and it's all get, regulated.
Yeah, so they can get into big trouble and poor things, right? They're under stress.
And they're dealing with, you know, PHI,
crazy.
Health information with HIPAA and everything. I think about like all the clicks and the copy paste
to like, other product folks in the industry. Just,
you know what? Some of our end users, they're like copy paste. They're literally on automation. They're just like robots and they don't seem to mind. They actually don't seem to mind. I can tell you though, that's our end users, our executive sponsors or our buyers are just like, oh my gosh, the time they spend. And they're so patient. Literally, I watched some products have spinners and they just sit there and they wait 45 seconds and then they'll go over here and they'll work on these other things. But you just don't have an appreciation for that stuff until you're out there and you see it in action. And it's not the same as putting it on Zoom and having people observe. I mean, that's one way to do it, especially if there's not like, we don't have a budget for travel. But, you know, when you do have a budget for travel, that is just the most important thing that you can do as a product manager is watch them in action. So that's probably the first thing that I'd say I continually draw on as part of my Intuit experience. The other thing that is so important is I will never forget going out to Tucson, which is, I don't even know if it's still that way at Intuit, but Tucson is where the support center is.
Yeah.
Taking calls.
Yeah.
And it just, there's nothing like that to drive empathy in an organization, whether you're a product manager or an executive or engineering manager, engineer, et cetera, just to drive empathy. But that is equally as important as not just watching our clients, our customers use the product in their environment with everything else in their context, but also taking support calls. It sounds, again, very basic, but, you know, I did have a couple of our teams have started to take calls. In fact, what we're finding is if you're not properly equipping your support team with knowledge-based FAQs, guess what? Those tickets will come back to you. Those tickets will come back to you, product owner.
Yeah.
So I think that's also, you know, been eye-opening for the team. Like, hey, how do we help our teams help our clients better? And that is a part of your job. Going back to the questions before.
This is all great wisdom for product managers and product leaders alike. So we absolutely agree in all sense of the word of sit and observe, be there, generate empathy. And I think you hit the nail on the head. As we come to a close, I mean, we could talk about this all day. We love these types of conversations because they are so helpful to other product folks in the industry and just hearing it at scale. I mean, you've got a very large organization and in healthcare, right? All of which is super hard, super complex. And we appreciate bringing this knowledge to our listeners. So thank you. As we close, what's one thing we can brag about you, or what's one thing you're doing now that you'd like to share with the rest of the product management community that we're talking to now?
Yeah, so I'm super proud. This is very timely because we just received awards at HIMSS, which is a large healthcare conference.
Yes.
It was actually, I think today's the last day in Florida. Two of our products, our claims management and contract manager products, just received the Best in Class award.
Wow.
And I don't know if you know what Best in Class is. And it's 2 years in a row, 2024 and 2023. So basically, it's a designation, it's a recognition that is actually based on provider feedback. So it's based on the very customers that we serve. We were highest ranked two years in a row for two of our products. So very proud of our team.
Yay.
Congratulations.
For that.
That's
so great.
Yeah. So that's probably a recent one. And that's probably it that I would highlight.
Well, there's nothing like your customers telling you that you're their favorite product to make your day. So that's fantastic, Clarissa. That's got to be rewarding, all the change. And you are so candid and so open with the change that you're going through. And I think for people out there, transformation is hard, right? This, you know, and coming in and working cross-functionally. And yes, you're working in healthcare, which is one of the hardest areas and industries to work in. But no matter where you are, it is difficult to be customer-centric, to get out there, to watch, to take the time. None of this is easy. And I think, you know, you're a year, 18 months in, and you talked about still being on this journey and all the steps, and you've just been so open. We just incredible appreciation for you just being so open with us. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Clarissa.
Thank you for the time. Appreciate it.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Product Rebels podcast.
If you enjoyed this conversation and want to learn more from Product Rebels, from companies like Netflix, Amplitude, and beyond, please follow us wherever you listen to podcasts and join us for another impactful interview in about 2 weeks.